It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we have another Snyder in the studio with us right now. This is Susie Snyder. You are the curator for the Washington, D.C.-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us. Something we were just talking about off the air, I wanted to make sure I covered your mission correctly. You are in Chicago. You are collecting items to put in the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. It's not a closed exhibit. You are constantly getting new items, aren't you?
We are. The museum is actively collecting. We have been actively collecting the entire 23 years we've been open. It's very important that people understand we are still seeking survivors and their loved ones who have not given material. We would like to illustrate their stories.
And tell us some of the stories. How long have you been here in Chicago? You're collecting some items. You're going to go back to D.C. Can you tell us about some of the items and some of the stories behind those items?
Sure. I've been here since Sunday on this trip, and I'm going to go from here to California and meet with people in California as well. But on this trip, I met with people who were rescued by going through. They went Trans-Siberian Rail through Russia and then into Japan, and they were able to get out because there was diplomats who issued them visas in Vilna, Lithuania. And by mere fact that these people were able to get these visas, that enabled them to travel. And these people ended up coming out and ended up in the United States by 1941, which is quite late, but still they made it.
Do they experience, I'm sure they do, guilt that they were able to survive and so many other people were not?
They do express guilt, but it's also very difficult to understand that when you were in a place like Eastern Europe after 1939, 1940, really you really had to go through and down into Italy to even fathom getting out. You just could not get out any other way because the borders were closed at that point on the Western European side. And at that point, people either needed to flee or they needed to, by going through Italy, or they needed to go into hiding. And I met with a woman this afternoon who did just that. She was a 8-year-old person and her parents placed her in hiding in Belgium.
I would imagine, Susie, and this is just by virtue of the years that this took place, it's harder and harder to find these people, isn't it? Their numbers are dwindling.
It is. The numbers are dwindling, and the most wonderful thing is that people are still, we still have survivors that are very active in our community,
yeah,
and that speak actively. And at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C., we have probably 45 or 50 survivor volunteers who actively work with us. They translate,
yeah,
they speak to groups. So we still have quite an active group of people.
All right. Tell us if we have not been to the Holocaust Museum. You said it's been there how many years?
23 years.
I went to Washington, D.C. as probably a young teenager with my mom and sister and brother. It's a great family trip. There are so many things to experience and so much history of this country and everything else. I have teenage boys. I should have already taken them.
You should have, but it's never too late. And the museum has wonderful changing exhibitions. And we have a fabulous exhibition right now on collaboration, which is important to look at both sides of how people rescued or were not able to rescue or chose not to rescue. And I think it's an important building. I think it's an important museum. 40% of our visitation at this point is school children.
I know this is a strange question, but because the stories are so different, do you find a commonality in the survivors? Is there anything that seems to be a common thread that runs through their stories?
The commonality that I would say I find within the survivors is that there is a lot of hope, and they went through a tremendous amount. They lost parents, grandparents, yeah, extended families, and they have really survived, and they are wonderful people. They have wonderful families. They have their own children, their own grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and they've really made it a mission to make sure people know what happened during the Holocaust, especially with what's going on today in our present-day world.
Yeah. Does Susie, that hope? Oh, I'm sorry. No, just really quick. Does that hope ever surprise you? Because I see that same hope, and sometimes you say to yourself, "How could somebody who's been through the ordeal that they've been through have that much hope?" Are you ever a little surprised by
it? Yes, we're always surprised by it. But and we say to ourselves every day, we can't imagine what it was like. We can't even understand what it must feel like.
Yeah.
But we're really, you know, we're buoyed by these people.
Mm-hmm.
Susie Snyder in the studio, no relation. DC-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum curator. Tell us a little about this diary that was written by a survivor at what, 4 concentration camps?
Yes.
Is this wrong information? Tuesday, a 16-page diary written by a man who survived at least 4 concentration camps. His daughter will be donating this.
Yes. And it's probably often people sat down and wrote their memoirs immediately after the war, and when they couldn't write it during the war. So the memoirs are very important to us, especially ones that date 1945-46, because those are immediate memories. And as time goes on, you remember things differently. So for us, those are very important memoirs to have. And we really welcome that kind of information, because in 1945 and 46, people were not documenting the Holocaust. We have one wonderful collection that was given to us that was recordings done by David Boder, who was here in Chicago. He went overseas to do the recordings. And he was able to record people in the 40s immediately, and that's really all we have.
Wow. Wow. This particular person survived 4 different camps. How would that play out? Was transferring from camp to camp, was that a common thing?
It was. Most people would be, especially in Eastern Europe, they would be deported from perhaps a ghetto to a place like Auschwitz, but Auschwitz had slave labor camps. And as the Russians were moving in on the Nazis towards 1944, 1945, the Nazis became scared and they moved their victims out of the East and towards the West. So then they would march them to concentration camps in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And then in those concentration camps, they might do slave labor in subcamps there.
What are some of the items in the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum that shock you? The whole thing is shocking and heartbreaking, but are there some that really touch you?
Yes, absolutely. We have a diary that was written by David Cherkoviak. This is, for me, it's a pronounced artifact, because he wrote the diary while he was in the Lodz ghetto in Poland. He died in 1943. He did not survive the ghetto because he died of starvation. But the thing that is shocking to me is that he writes about the degradation of his family and how his father became so hungry and so really just beaten down that he was stealing food from his own children.
Yeah.
Because it's the Nazis caused them to either turn on each other or to work with each other. And many people did work with each other, but this is an unfortunate case where David Cherkoviak's father really just lost all hope and also died probably in the ghetto.
What do you make of the people who saved so many people? We've heard stories over the years about people who, even though they were told point blank, if we catch you hiding anybody, you're dead, we're going to kill you, and yet so many people did that. What do you make of those stories? That's just amazing to me.
It's amazing to us, too. I mean, we find that to be very strong, and we are very impressed with people who did that, especially in Poland, because if you were caught, you were usually killed.
Yeah.
You were executed. And yesterday I met with a woman who explained to me that her mother, who was in hiding with members of her family, was in France. And the two people that hid her family in France after the liberation were killed by townspeople because they were hiding Jews. So a lot of people took great risk, incredibly great risk.
And the war was over at that point when they were killed?
War was over, yeah. There was a lot of retribution after the war, unfortunately, especially in Eastern Europe and especially in Poland. And then I think one of the amazing things is that many times entire towns rescued people. So
right.
We have that example also in France, where a whole community risked their lives to rescue hundreds and hundreds of Jewish children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that was a common thing, too, where parents, and I can't imagine this, just sending your children away. You need to survive. We'll figure it out on our own. I'm sure that happened in so many situations.
Yes, and it was an incredible leap of faith. Now that I have my own children, I can't imagine doing that.
Doesn't that change everything? Having a child really does change the way you view everything, and you would do anything to keep that child alive, and in a way you understand it more. You know, trying to keep them alive, it's like you'd do anything.
Yeah.
Can I ask a favor, Susie? Throw your headphones on. There's some calls. Again, it's Susie Snyder from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum. She is the curator in Washington, D.C., and Jerry has something he wants to throw your way. Jerry, go ahead. What did you want to ask?
Yes, I just wondered, has the lady who's here from Washington, has she checked with the Skokie Holocaust Museum at all?
I actually work really closely with their curator. We work together. They borrow artifacts from us. We borrow artifacts from them.
I see.
So we work with the same community, and we currently have an exhibition that's there on loan from our institution.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for the information. I was just curious.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it. Do you want to take another call? Do we have time for another call, or should we take a break?
Take a break.
We'll take a quick break. Susie Snyder's here from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Susie Snyder is here. She is the D.C.-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum curator. She's in Chicago on a collections trip as part of the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum's urgent race to rescue evidence of the Holocaust before the last generation of Holocaust survivors are gone. How does the process usually happen? They usually somehow inform you that they have something, and then what happens exactly from there, Susie?
Depending on where they live, we have curators who live in a number of places, curators who work in a number of places.
Yeah.
So I generally travel to and from Chicago a lot, so I come here. One of my colleagues goes to Israel. One of my colleagues goes to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
But we have offices in New York, California, Florida, Chicago. So we often work in collaboration with those offices. And somebody contacts us. We usually like to meet with people in person. We try the best we can. Sometimes we can't. But the very first thing they have to do is really contact us.
Right.
And there is a way to do it. We were asking Susie off the air. I'm a bit of a hoarder. My dad died when I was young. I hang on to things, but I never really go back and look at them. If someone has a relative that was involved in the Holocaust, how do they contact you? And do they contact you just to say what it is they have? Maybe they're not ready to part with it yet.
Exactly. We just want to know that they're out there. We're happy to work with them on their time frame. And they can send us emails at curator@ushmm.org.
You've already told Wendy and me this, but we want to share it with everybody. You guys are very low pressure. If somebody has something, you want to just document it and let it know that it exists. If they're not ready to part with it, you're very understanding. There's no pressure involved, right?
There's no pressure. I mean, obviously, we know the importance of it to family members.
Yeah.
We're dealing with a live constituency, people that it's, you know, we're not talking about a Van Gogh painting.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, you know, some of these people use the collection. They're still doing research on the collection. But it's important if you're a survivor that we work with you, because every generation removed from the collection, we know less and less.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yep.
I mean, think about it. Before, when our grandparents were older, we didn't have iPhones to very easily ask our grandparents questions. My grandfather came from Italy. It would have been great to just record him and ask these stories, and it's like you don't realize that till they're gone.
Yeah.
So it's great to get the stories. And Susie, we have Dave on the line who has a potential artifact. Dave, this is Susie Snyder, curator with the D.C.-based U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm not sure you could use this in its form, but I have a letter, and I was trying to get the curator address down, but I didn't get it off, so maybe you could say it again. But I have a letter that my dad wrote when he was at they were brought over his division. Well, it was under Patton, and in 44 and 45, they started finding the camps. And I only have a couple of letters from my dad, but one of them he talks about that one of the camps they liberated I don't know which one it is, but the soldiers were, the German soldiers at the time, and they might have caught him by surprise, they were dressing up as the prisoners. And they didn't know what to do. They couldn't differentiate between the two. But anyway, the letter's interesting in what it's talking about. And I never knew it existed, and I didn't know if that was something that the museum would want. And it's real fragile. I've been going through all this, his things and his pictures and like things, and trying to get them archived. But if a copy of it or something of an actual combat units, what their take on it when they were finding these camps.
What an amazing find, first of all. And Susie, do you work with some of these people to help restore these items?
So we have a conservation staff, and we do stabilize the collections when we bring them in. So a lot of what we have is on fragile paper, and we see this a lot. I would say this is something that sounds like it would be of interest to us, because we're also very interested in the liberation aspect of the Holocaust and trying to document what soldiers and liberators saw when they came upon the camps. And we will work with families to determine if it's something that we want. But from your description, it sounds like it's of interest to the museum.
So here's the address again, Dave. It's curator@ushmm.org, and that stands for U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum, ushmm.org, curator@. And what a story. I mean, just finding out more information really moves the story along, and you need to get these artifacts before you don't have access to them anymore. Dave, thank you so much.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Susie, thanks for being here. And again, we want to urge people, if you're anywhere near Washington, D.C., you owe it to yourself to see this great tribute and museum to one of the darkest periods of human existence, really. But it's one of those stories where if you don't understand history, we are doomed to repeat it. You have to see what happened. It's unbelievable. It really is. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That's Susie Snyder from the U.S. Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. A quick break, and then we'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.